to a Hope 103.2 podcast.
Last night, I started talking about the view of sex in popular media. I suggested that even though the media claims to promote sex, it actually ends up doing the opposite. It trivializes sex. It reduces it to the physical encounter itself. I was reading a women's magazine a while ago. It was research, of course. And there was an article entitled, "Let's Talk About Sex." It shared the results of a survey asking teenage girls about their sexual views. One of the findings was that in deciding when to have sex, 66% of the girls surveyed said they, quote, came to a mutual decision. They both felt it was the right thing to do. The magazine then added that this was a very sensible decision. But part of the problem with feeling it's the right thing to do is that a lot of blokes, frankly, feel it's right anytime. The warm fuzzies of new love combined with the strong drive of the sexual urge are not reliable indicators for such important decisions. Whether in this article or many of the other ones I've read, there is very little discussion about the deeper side of the sexual experience, the relational, psychological, and even spiritual side of it. It's as if physical pleasure is all there is to sex. But as soon as we accept the advice of these modern sexperts, we're heading for a hollow, confusing, and even harmful view of sex, one that threatens to ruin our relationships. We'll end up wondering why on earth we can't hold down our relationships, and why commitment, trust, and honesty are so foreign to our relationships. It's an undersell. It's a rip-off. Any psychologist or sex therapist or average person on the street is going to tell you that the sexual encounter is often a whole person encounter. By this I mean that there's an emotional and psychological impact which accompanies sexual experience. It's not just a physical act like going to the toilet. It touches deep emotions. And it's this deeper dimension to sex that many of us have been conned out of. Let me give you an illustration. My first car was an orange Datsun 1200. It got me from A to B, but it really was a rust bucket. It only cost me $1,000, so I didn't treat it so well, and I had no problem lending it out to my friends. I figured that if they crashed it, it wasn't that big a deal. Suppose, though, I owned the latest BMW. I can assure you I'd care for it with my life, and I certainly wouldn't lend it out to my friends. In my mind, such a valuable machine deserves the utmost care. What's this got to do with sex and relationships? Everything, I think. The media sexperts can fool us into taking a Datsun approach to sex. Lend it out. It's not that special. But in God's eyes, sex is more like a top-of-the-line BMW. It's valuable. It demands care. It's something precious to us and to Him. It's not merely the machinery by which we get about and enjoy ourselves. This may sound strange, but actually recently, one of the leading feminists in the world said something pretty similar to what I'm saying in the New York Magazine. In an article about pornography, Naomi Wolf wrote about the way the accessibility of pornography today has actually cheapened us and cheapened sex itself. Let me quote. "But does all this sexual imagery in the air mean that sex has been liberated? If your appetite is stimulated and fed by poor quality material, it takes more junk to fill you up. People are not closer because of porn, but further apart. People are not more turned on in their daily lives, but less so." If human beings are just glorified apes who wear Nikes, then it probably makes sense to live entirely by our natural instincts. But if there is something different about us, if relationships are key to our fulfillment, if there is a God who has carefully designed a plan for our sexual lives, then it makes sense to preserve our expression of sexual intimacy to the context of a lifelong commitment, the context of loyalty and trust. The higher you value sex, the more careful you're going to be. Far from being against sex, God is very much for it. It's not as if Adam and Eve discovered sex one day and thought, you know, let's not tell God, he's bound to get annoyed. The Creator is creative. He could have invented a method of having children that involved spitting on each other's big toe. If he'd wanted to do it, that's how he would have done it. But instead, he invented sex. Fantastic, enjoyable, intimate, exciting, beautiful sex. And because sex is so valuable, God has given some very smart, clear guidelines and rules for its enjoyment and to keep us from getting hurt and from hurting others. The so-called sexperts usually say these guidelines are restrictive and boring, but that's just because they've been tricked into thinking that a BMW is a Datsun. Actually, God's insistence that we enjoy sex in the context of our one lifelong relationship of loyalty and trust is the most meaningful and liberating sexpert advice out there. When you're in bed with someone who has promised to devote their life to you for keeps, the experience is so much better. For a start, there is a deep mutual trust, something that is essential for great sex and near impossible to find in casual sexual encounters. More than that, because you're with your lifetime partner, you have all the time in the world to get better and better at enjoying each other physically. The desire to get what you want while you can, which is a very selfish and unsatisfying approach to sex, gives way to a desire to give all you can for as long as you can, which is a very satisfying approach to sex. The pressure to perform, something that often hinders performance, gives way to mutual acceptance and enjoyment of each other, something that often heightens performance. Unlike today, in modern first century Palestine, when Jesus was alive, sexual immorality was a very, very big deal. And a true story is recorded in the Bible about a woman who was known to have lived a sinful life in that town. There are no prizes for guessing what people meant by that. One day, Jesus happened to be in a town having a meal at the home of a prominent religious leader named Simon. And this woman turned up. Now, it was bad enough for a normal person to turn up without an invitation. So imagine what it was like for a woman with her reputation. To make things worse, she came into the room, fell down at Jesus' feet, and burst into tears. Imagine the scene. Here was this woman in all her fear and shame, in a room full of self-righteous religious people. As you'd expect, Simon, the religious leader, was furious, not only with the woman, but also with Jesus. He thought to himself, if Jesus really was a man sent from God, he'd be able to tell what kind of woman she was, and Jesus would tell her to back off. But the point is this. Jesus did know what kind of woman she was, and he still welcomed her. In fact, Jesus even defended her in front of all these important guests. To top it all off, he then turned to her and spoke what must have been the kindest words she had ever heard. He said, "Your sins are forgiven." I'm sure she could hardly believe her ears. She'd been used to guilt and rejection, but here was someone offering her acceptance and forgiveness. These words marked a new beginning for her life. Now, I suppose some of you are well aware of the big rip-off that robs sex of intimacy and leaves us with a cheap substitute. Some of you listening right now have probably experienced it firsthand. You've gone against God's wishes. You've disobeyed his commands. And now you regret it deeply. Well, when I read a story like this woman coming to Jesus, and there are plenty of others like it, I'm reminded that in Jesus' mind, there's no such thing as a point of no return. No matter what we've done or become, the great news is that there can be restoration, forgiveness, and a new beginning.
Hope 103.2. Thanks for listening.